Expel the bleias, the taste inside the pot of chametz. So when I expel them, is it called iser? And if it's called iser, that means since it's really chametz, so it's isura bala. So if I expel them, so even though it gets expelled into the kashering pot, it gets expelled into the water, but I'm worried that it might come right back into my utensil that I'm trying to kasher. So let's say I'm trying to kasher my cutlery. So even though it gets expelled through the hot water into the kashering pot, but why am I not worried that it goes back in? So the Rosh says, even if I'm worried that it goes back in, but it's called not bar not, which means it gets expelled from the cutlery into the pot, to the water of the pot, and then it goes right back into the pot, perhaps, into the cutlery. But that's not bar not. You know, it's already two different tastes. So therefore, it's not a big deal. It's a teira bala. It's no problem, and it's okay. And the Avi Ezri says that it's not good. Why? Because chametz before Pesach is isura bala, which means, I mean, the Gemara says a teira bala. Gemara says, for example, noisar. If I eat kachim in a keli, I eat a utensil, and I eat kachim in my utensil, and I cleaned it utensil. But the bleis in the utensil, in 2 days from now, or after the zman, it's going to become nicer. It's going to become left over. So I have to kasher it. So the Gemara says, yeah, but until it becomes nicer, it's a teira bala, because it's kachim, it's permitted to be eaten. So the Gemara says it's called a teira bala. So the Avi Ezri says, that's a teira bala, because right now it's still kachim, it's not noiser at all. Mashein ken chametz, right now it's chametz. So even though chametz is not forbidden right now, but it's still chametz. And therefore, we call that isura bala. And since we call it isura bala, it means it really iser, so it's not going to help me that it's not barnat. In other words, it's really iser, so when it gets expelled from the cutlery into the kashering pot, it's chametz. And then it goes right back in, that's also chametz. So even though it's not bar not, it went to another stage, but it's called all iser, it's all chametz, and therefore the Avi Ezri says, it's no good, you cannot kasher like that. And therefore the Avi Ezri says, halach l'maisa, when you kasher, when you do hagolas kelim, make sure that the items that you want to kasher, the utensils, the cutlery, the bechers, whatever you want to kasher, make sure it was not used for 24 hours beforehand. Since it wasn't used for hot for 24 hours beforehand, so therefore it's going to become, even if it gets expelled, the taste is called Mason Tam Liv Gam. It's a bad taste. It's not a potent taste because it's ready after 24 hours from the last time there was any taste at all. So whatever gets expelled from the cutlery is called Mason Tam Liv Gam. And therefore, if it's Mason Tam Liv Gam, even if it goes back inside the cutlery, therefore, you don't have to worry about that because it's nice and tam of gum. So therefore, you always wait 24 hours. So the halacha really is, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch number one, is we don't hold like that, obviously. The halacha is like the Rosh. And the halacha is that you can kasher anything, me'ikar adin, you can kasher anything, even if it wasn't standing alone, even if it wasn't, it didn't have the 24-hour wait period. Why? Because it's only yichshash. That what are you worried about? That some of it's going to come out and then it's going to go back in. It's only yichshash. And meika din we hold that it's a teravola and it doesn't have to wait 24 hours. That's meika din. Says the Mishnah Berurah and the Gra and others that since many rishonim hold that it's isura bala, which means that whatever comes out from the cutlery, what I'm trying to kasher, is called chametz. And therefore, the only way you can kasher, and you should kasher, is if it waits 24 hours. And therefore, that's halacha lemaisa at the end of the day, which means that you cannot kasher anything. You want to kasher your bechers, you want to kasher your cutlery, whatever you want to kasher, and we'll soon discuss what you can kasher and what you should kasher. But whatever you want to kasher, make sure it was not used for 24 hours. It wasn't used 24 hours. And therefore, there's really nothing to worry about, because you're going to put it inside a big pot, which has bubbling water. So what are you worried about? That the cutlery, which you're trying to kasher, is going to sit in the pot too long, and the water won't be bubbling the whole time. And we say that only the taste gets expelled while it's bubbling. But when it stops bubbling, then it doesn't get expelled anymore, and you're worried that it might come back inside because the water is hot. It will get reabsorbed inside your cutlery that you tried to kasher, says the Mishnah Berurah. Well, anyway, since you waited 24 hours from using it last, so it's a nice and tam lip gum type of taste. And if it's a nice and tam lip gum type of taste, you have nothing to worry about. And therefore, you can kasher like that, no problem. That is what the Avi Ezri says, and the Mishnah Berurah says, and therefore, there's no real issue. However, says the Aruch HaShulchan, and we mentioned a little bit on Sunday night, that if that's the case, it really defeats the purpose. Which means, if you're saying that there's a real chance that maybe the water wasn't bubbling the entire time, because as long as it bubbles, the bad taste of the chametz gets expelled from the cutlery that I'm trying to kasher into the water. But if there's a real worry that, you know, while it stops bubbling for 10 seconds, and then there's a real worry that that taste that just got expelled from the cutlery, from the kashered kalim, gets expelled, gets absorbed, reabsorbed back inside your kalim. So you're right, it's only a not by not livgam, and it wasn't used 24 hours, and it's okay. But like, what did you accomplish then? You're trying to accomplish not to have any chametz inside your pots. And therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, if you, that's what you're trying to accomplish, so if you're not makpid on all the chumras, then it's going to go right back in. See, right, it's not really the end of the world because it's not banat legam. Then what did you accomplish? That's what Aruch HaShulchan says. The idea is to get rid of the bad taste of chametz and not to have it come back inside your keli, inside your utensil. So then what did you accomplish? So the Mishnah Berurah says that even though we wait 24 hours for the kalim that they're not used for 24 hours, and therefore we're really machme, even not like the Shulchan Aruch, not like the Rosh, and we say it's already nice and tam legam, and it's all okay, but you should still try and be machmer on all the chumras that we have, as if it would not have waited 24 hours. We don't want any part of my chametz dikah taste from my cutlery that I'm trying to kasher. I don't want any of that to go back inside my kalim. And therefore, you should try and be machmer on all the chumras. And what are all these chumras that he's mentioning? He says, really, there's a chumra to make sure that you don't keep it in more than 10 seconds. Put it in while it's bubbling and take it out while it's bubbling. Don't let it be lahaniach mirti chasai. May hope to try that it doesn't stop its bubbling. Because as long as it bubbles, all things only go one way. They go out, they don't come back in. So try and be machmir, even if the utensils were not used 24 hours, try and be machmir that it's only, you put it in when it bubbles, and you take it right out. But you can't take it out immediately, because then it didn't have time to get expelled. So you got to keep it in for some time. How long do you keep it in for? 10 seconds. But make sure it's on the fire the whole time, and it's bubbling the whole time. Therefore, maybe you shouldn't put all the cutlery in at the same time, or too many bechers at the same time, because then it's going to cool down, it's going to stop bubbling. So do it one by one. That's another chumrah that he says. Do it one by one. He says it's even better to have a big pot of huge, huge kashering pot that you have 60 times shishim against all the Mishnah Berurah quoted in the Bi'ah Halacha, number 5 over here, the sheet. You can look at it at home. But basically he's saying that it's not kedai, another yuzi. No, that's not a Mishnah Berurah, actually. The Mishnah Berurah is something else. But in other words, try and have a big pot. So like this, you have 60 times shishin against all the kalim that you're kashering. So even if the chametz goes in, but it gets batel b'shishim right away. And if it's batel b'shishim right away, it won't go back inside your cutlery. So you should be machmir on that. Then the Mishnah Berurah says you should be machmir, even unless you have a big thing. So you have to do it two times, right? You're so kashering, you can do it once, and then you do it a second time, the opposite, because you can't fit it all into your kashering pot. Says the Mishnah Berurah, you know, you're doing it twice, it's really a problem, because you're going to put back in this the part of the part of the half that you did already before, so you're exposing your kashered part to again that bad water. That's no good. Says the Mishnah Berurah, you should use, like we said on Sunday night, use a holy bag, use a bag of holes that you put in, one of these things you put in, you put your socks in for the when you wash in the wash machine, a bag with holes, and put your stuff in there. Everything in one shot, you put it in, you put it out, rather than putting it in two separate times. Because after all, you know, you're lending yourself to problems by putting in the part that was just kashered, even though you're not intending to put it in, but half of it will go in, part of it will go in, because you can't be mitzamtzim exactly, you can't fit it exactly. Says the Mishnah Berurah, better not to do that. Better to put it in one shot, in and out. So to have a big pot of shishim, 60 times all the kalim, you're kashering it, not to do too many at one time, because it cools down the water. In general, you shouldn't do too many in one shot, because then the water might not go in between. Do it 1, 2, 3. Don't do it in two times. These are all the chumras that the Mishnah Berurah says. If you really want to do it right, that's the way to kasher your utensils. Now, in a regular year, where we take our hagolas kelim, we drop it off. So the Mishnah Berurah says you're supposed to have somebody standing over there with a fam chacham to make sure all these things are done. And by the way, that's why I think the Yisayv Sherei Shavayda writes that it's better not to rely on kashering anything. Because, you know, you want to do really right with Machmir and Pesach and all the chumras, then you really shouldn't kasher them, because it's very hard to get it completely right. But we know, now we know the concept, Me'ikar Adin, it's not even a chash. And Me'ikar Adin, we only have stuff, we only kasher anything which hasn't been used in 24 hours. And therefore it's not banav livgam. And Me'ikar Adin, that's good enough. The only thing is just the chumra upon the chumra. So when we're kashering in our own home, we don't have to worry about any of those things. And as long as we kasher and we use our utensils, we want a kasher that wasn't used for 24 hours, it was clean, it had no chatzitz on it, and you kasher it inside a pot, and the pot is bubbling, then you put it in, leave it 10 seconds, and you take it out. Maybe it will cool down a little bit. Okay, so wait till it bubbles again. Maybe you weren't as careful. It's after 24 hours, it's nice and time lived down. If you do it in two separate times with the tongs, then maybe part of it that you just kashered, you're putting back in, you're lending itself to issues, not a big deal. Because you know why? At the end of the day, it's after 24 hours, so we're not really chashish for anything, it's only a chash rachik, and the truth is, it's all good anyway, it's nice and time lived down, it's all good. And therefore, bizman azeh, or at least in today's current situation, one can definitely kasher himself at home, and that's what he should do. Now, what does that mean? So, any questions on the concept, first of all? Anybody have any questions on the concept? And then we can be practical.
Not necessarily a question on the concept, but just to refresh my recollection from yesterday also, the pot that you're using needs to be kosher for Pesach.
Right, we're discussing that right now. So now, what does that mean for practical purposes? So again, the truth is, the best thing to do is to use a kashering pot. A pot exclusive for kashering. Or a Pesach pot that you're not planning to use this year. I spoke to another Rav, he says, well, I tell my people, go to Variety, buy yourself a cheap pot for $10, the biggest pot you find, and let that be your kashering pot. You put your kashering pot on your Pesach Dikah grates, after you kashered your kitchen already, the day before, make sure it's before Erev Pesach, before Erev Pesach kashering, otherwise it's an issue. So make sure it's done before Wednesday at 10:30 in the morning. You take a Pesach Dikah pot, you're not going to use that again on Pesach, you put on your Pesach Dikah grates. Or you take a big kashering pot, or you buy yourself a new pot that you're not using, brand new, and you fill up with water, bubbling water. You put your bechers, cutlery, whatever you want to kasher, one by one inside, and you're done. Take it out after 10 seconds, and you're good. And you rinse it with cold water, and that's the easiest way to do it. Now, most of us don't have a special dikker, special, what's the name? Most of us don't have a Pesach dikker pot that we're not going to use. By the way, if you're going to use the Pesach dikker pot that you were planning to use on Pesach, who's calling? Oops. Okay. I guess somebody's calling in. Okay. If you're planning to use a Pesach dikker pot that you want to use during Pesach, then after you put all your stuff inside and you kashered all your utensils, you have to re-kasher that pot if you want to use it for Pesach, because clearly it has chametz, taste of chametz, in your big Pesach dikker kashering pot. So in order to kasher a pot, it's not so easy. We spoke about it Sunday night. But a kasher pot, you really have to fill it up at the top and fill it with water and boil it and let it bubble. And you really have to overflow it as well if you want to kasher the pot and use it on Pesach. And the way you overflow a bubbling pot is you fill it to the top, let it bubble and boil. You take a hanger that sat in the fire or a brick that sat on the fire, and you put it inside, and you see it all spritzes over, and you kashered your pot. So if you use a real Pesach dikker pot on your Pesach dikker grates, and you kasher, and now you want to use that pot during Pesach, you'll have to re-kasher that pot. Don't recommend it. It's complicated, hard, it makes more of a mess. Not a good idea. So either you use a special kashering pot, or what you could use just as much is use a chametz dikker pot. Use a chametz dikker pot that was not used for 24 hours. Again, if the chametz dikker pot was used within 24 hours, then we didn't gain anything. And all the taste of the chametz of the big pot is going to go inside your utensils. You don't want that either. So use a chametz dikker pot that was not used 24 hours. And there the Mishnah Berurah says that there's a chumrah that before you kasher, even though the big pot that you're using to kasher was not used 24 hours, says the Mishnah Berurah, it's best if you kasher it first. Even though it's nice and tam lav gam, you should really kasher it first. So here there's a kula, especially if you're doing it yourself, you don't really have to kasher it all the way. Because since it's nice and tam lav gam, it wasn't used 24 hours, so it's really okay, even according to the Avi Ezri. But here, rather what you should do is take that big chametz dikker pot, and before you put in your stuff to kasher, fill up that big chametz dikker pot with hot water, let it boil. You don't have to let it overflow. As long as it gets kashered till the top with hot water, we say that the hot water spreads inside and out through the walls. Usually when we kasher, we don't do that. Yeah, because that's where chosher that something touched the outside of the pot. But here, it's only a chumrah. You don't have to do the full kashering. And therefore, you want to be machmir, if you have time, take that chametz dikker pot and fill it up to the top with hot water, let it boil, get it, finish it, throw it in the sink, throw it somewhere, and then fill it up again with water, boil it, bubble it, and then start your kashering process, where you take your utensils that you want to kasher, which haven't been used in 24 hours either, and you kasher them one by one or few by few. And while it's bubbling, you put it inside, let it sit there 10 seconds, take it right out, rinse it with cold water, and your stuff is kashered. The only problem with your chametz dikker pot, that you're kashering with chametz dikker pot, well, where are you warming it up? What grates are you putting it in? Are you putting it on your Pesach dikker grates that you just kashered? You want to put your chametz dikker pot on your Pesach dikker grates and cook water on your Pesach dikker grates? Doesn't sound so good. But put it on your chametz dikker grates, then everything is chametz. How does that work? So I think that there's two ways you can do it. Either you can do it on your chametz dikker grates and make sure the grates are more or less clean. Turn them on for 20 minutes before you do your kashering process, so you kind of burnt out the no chametz on your grates, then put the chametz dikker pot there and do your kashering on the chametz dikker pot on your chametz dikker grates. then you're good to go. There's no problem over there. Or you can take your chametz tikka pot, and if the chametz tikka pot was not used 24 hours, then you can put it on your Pesach dikka grates, because it wasn't used for 24 hours, it's before Pesach. And there's no real chametz in that pot right now. So you put your chametz tikka pot on your Pesach dikka grates, and you first put some water in it, you fill it up, you throw it out, then you put in new water and you bubble it and you put all your kalim inside that you want to kasher. And when you finish kashering, just put the grates back on for 20 minutes, because you the pace of the grates, you don't want any bleas of chametz to be on the grates. You put them on for 20 minutes, wherever the pot, you know, when you put it on, and you burnt it out. So either way, you have to, you know, you have to put some grates on, the grate that you used, put it on for 20 minutes. If you're using the chametz dikka grates, then you put it before you do the kashering, you turn it on for 20 minutes or 15 minutes. And if you use the Pesach dikka grates, then you turn on the grate that you used for the kashering after the kashering. But either one, you'll spend 15 minutes just turning on the grate, the burner on the grates that you use for kashering for 50 minutes, either before or after, depending if you use your chametz dikka grates or your Pesach dikka grates. Of course, if you use a kashering pot that is not chametz, was only used for kashering, or a new pot, then you don't have to do anything, because it's just it's a clean pot. It was never used for chametz, was only used for kashering last year, so then it's not a big deal. Maybe you would have to use the Pesach dikka grates. You might have to put it on for 15 minutes afterwards. Then yes. Any questions on the which pots to use and on the actual kashering process?
I have a quick question. What do you do with the water afterwards? Because that water that now has chametz in it.
Don't throw it in your Pesach dikka sink.
Okay, so you like throw it in the bathtub or something.
Exactly. Okay?
Yes, thanks.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, you don't want to throw it in your face like you think. Even though it's only a chumrah, mikah din, it's fine. If you did, it's not the end of the world. It will still be okay, because at the end of the day, it's all nesim tamim of gan. Everything that you use, whether your stuff that you kashered or the pot, has all not been used for 24 hours. So therefore, by the end of it, it's all okay. Now that is regarding
What's the purpose of putting it in cold water afterwards?
Putting cold water, the reason why they say to do that is, again, for the same reason. As a chumrah, again, if you didn't do it, it's okay. But as a chumrah, because maybe some of the hot water, the foul water, stayed on your pot. So we wanted to rinse it off with cold water. Stayed on the pot and didn't get absorbed into the pot. So we want to rinse it off with cold water. It's all based on the same thing. Again, if you hold an ikar din, even before Pesach, a teir bala like the Shulchan Aruch paskens, there's no problem. And even if you hold like the Avi Ezri, and they hold it's Isura Bala, and it's Isra Chametz, but I didn't use it for 24 hours. So it's not Banat Levgam. So really, we're good on all our fronts, but when it comes to Pesach, the Gemara says it, the Shulchan Aruch says it, and the Pesachim say that we chumre the Pesach, we try to be machmir as much as we can. Of course, this year it's much harder, we have our own kashering, but that's the way to do it. So it's fairly simple. You basically take a pot, either Pesach take a pot, but then you have to kasher that afterwards, or a chametz dikka pot that hasn't been used 24 hours, and you kasher everything inside, there's no problem. What can you kasher? So we can kasher bechers, silver bechers, people kasher. Has to be metal to kasher. Glass, you cannot really kasher. And klicheres, earthenware, mugs, you cannot kasher. You can only kasher metal or silverware. So people like to kasher bechers. Maybe the need be, people will kasher cutlery. Be careful if it's a knife and it's made out of two parts. It's kind of iffy-ish. Depends how it's made. I really see the knife. If it's like the old-fashioned knife, I have really a separate handle screwed in. Not so simple to kasher that. Only if it's really one part. People say that if the bechers have very heavy tarnish on it, then you should first polish it and then kasher it. If it's just a light tarnish, it's not a big deal. If it's a heavy tarnish that just comes right off, basically, then it might be chatzitza, and you should polish it first and then kasher it. Pots and pans. You could kasher pots and pans. pots and pans are a little bit problematic. Why? Because kashering only helps for blias, for something that's absorbed. But chametz be'en, pieces of chametz, no matter how small they are, kashering is not going to help for it. And therefore, many times in the pots and pans, especially underneath the rim, you'll find pieces of gook and stuff like that. And really, that has to be cleaned out first before you kasher, because kashering only helps on what's absorbed, not that chametz that's actually there. And many times it's very hard to clean it and to kasher it. And therefore, and to clean it before you kasher it. And therefore, all these kashering places always have a blowtorch at hand, because if you can't really get to it and you can't really clean it, they take a blowtorch and they burn out many times alongside the rim of the pot and the pan. We don't have a kashering places here. We do, however, have a blowtorch. Jeff Gernon is willing to make his blowtorch available to all that need. Get in contact with him if you want to use the blowtorch for the rims or for the hard to get places of chametz that you want to burn out that is there, and kashering will not help for that. But it's problematic to do a pot. Also, by the way, the Shulchan Aruch says that you gotta kasher the handles as well, not just the actual pots, but the handles also have to be kasher. Well, kashering can be done in two separate shots. So you can do the first part, and then you do the second part. But the handles also have to be kasher. There's a reason. The question: Machlokes Magen Avraham and Taz, why the handles have to be kasher? Magen Avraham says cham nitzotze cham kulay, which means that if part of the pot it gets hot and gets straight, and the chametzik it extends to the entire pot. The Taz says, oh, that's not the reason, but the reason is rather because we chashed that some chametz fell on it and splashed on it, and therefore it's only chash. So even if the handles are plastic, then you can kasher the pot with the plastic handle. Obviously, if the pot is plastic, you cannot kasher that. So you can only really kasher metal, and plastic handles are okay, but metal is the only thing that can be kashered. Bechers, generally people kasher. Glass cannot get kashered. Cutlery, if you need to, people kasher that. Pots, much harder. Again, in Yerushalayim, when people have no money, people kasher pots. In Amsterdam, my father tells me that they were makel like the rush and said, you don't have to wait 24 hours. I said, why don't you have to wait 24 hours? What's a big deal? My father says, because over there they're poor or they're notoriously cheap, hence the expression to go Dutch. The Dutch are notoriously cheap. So therefore, they would use the same pot every place after eat to make the noodles, and they don't want to kasher the next morning. So therefore, they went in wait 24 hours and they followed the rush. However, Baruch Hashem, we are not like that. And therefore, we always make sure we wait 25 hours. But if you have no pots, and it's now Erev Pesach, or it's a week before and there's no way to get pots, then you can kasher pots as well. But please call me beforehand to make sure that it's not dirty enough that it would require libun, which is a blowtorch, to burn out the actual pieces of chametz that are there. Now, one more thing.
There is a Haggalah in the neighborhood that promises to use social distancing.
You can do that. I do not recommend going there. I love the one that does it, and I use it myself every year. But I don't know, just too risky. You're touching things, you're touching the same things. It's just not worth it. People are dying, you know.
Right.
Over Shabbos, we had three people in the shul who lost a relative. And today alone, we had three people in the shul lost an uncle. Three people in the shul lost an uncle in Brooklyn. So I don't like to take that risk. I'm showing you how you can kasher yourself. Believe you me, you don't need all the chumras. We know Mekha Din. Even if it's Ben Yoma, you can kasher. Ain't Ben Yoma, for sure you can kasher. Once it's Ain't Ben Yoma, you have really nothing to worry about. So in case it's there too long, or it sits in the water too long, or the pot is not big enough, or you do it twice, it's all good. At the end of the day, it's all kasher, it's all good. And therefore, I'm very happy kashering myself. One more thing. When you kasher your countertops, it's also really a form of kashering. You're not doing Haggalah inside a pot with boiling hot water, but you're doing Irui. You're pouring the hot water from the kashering pot. Rather than putting the countertop in the kashering pot, you're pouring the water from the kashering pot into the countertop, onto the countertop. So it's a different type of kashering. It's also a kashering. It's a kashering. Rather than putting it inside, you pour from there onto the countertop. So there, there, the Aruch HaShulchan actually brings down that if you use a Pesach Dikapat, another we said, if I put my cutlery inside my Pesach Dikapat, then I have to kasha that pot if I want to use it for Pesach, because it has all the chametz in the water from the blias, from the cutlery, which got expelled into the water, right? So we said that. But if I kasher my countertops with the water inside this kashering pot, do I also have to worry about the steam coming out from the countertops back into my Pesach Dikapat? And this was chametz dikah steam coming into my Pesach Dikapat? I should worry about that. So the Aruch HaShulchan number 6 says that the women were machmir. Veda, says the Aruch HaShulchan, shahanoshim noyagos, the women were makbid, shaloy lishtamesh bepesach ba'akadeiro, they wouldn't use the pot, sheshoifchim mimenu goyskin ala shulchanos vashav salim. Not the pot just that they put the cutlery inside, but even the pot that they poured onto the countertop, hot bubbling water, they said, oh my gosh, the steam of the countertop, this chametz coming right back into my pot, that's a problem. I have to kasha that pot for Pesach again. Because of the steam that would come out. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, ve'ein b'ha minik hazeh shum tam v'reach. This minik has no taste and no smell and no hevel. You don't have to worry about that. And the reason why the Aruch HaShulchan says you don't have to worry about this chumrah is because there's no real, even if the steam is coming, it's not going into the pot, and it's really not used after 24 hours, and it's not banav livgam, and it's not the same as putting actual water inside my pot and the chametz of the kalim going inside the water inside the pot. It's only chash of steam. It's a much further chash, and therefore Allah l'maisa says, Aruch HaShulchan, it's not a minik. You don't have to worry about that. And therefore, that makes a big difference for us. When I'm kashering my countertop and I'm kashering my sink, I can either use, yeah, for sure, I can first kasher my grates, that's what I do. First I take my grates and I put inside the oven and I kasher my grates. And then I can even take a Pesach Dikapat or a kashering pot. I don't have to use a Chametz Dikapat. I can use a Pesach Dikapat, fill it up with water, boil it, and use that in order to pour it all over my sink and my countertop. And use that same pot afterwards for Pesach. It doesn't make that pot chametz dik. Or alternatively, I can take a chametz dikka urn, a chametz dikka urn that's only really used to make my hot water, not the urn, I'm talking about the kettle, the old-fashioned kettle with the spout, that's only used to make hot water. It's never really chametz dik. It's just used to make water during the whole year, and I can pour that on my countertops or my sinks, and I don't have to worry about the chumrah of kashering that pot first. Because it's, again, nothing is going inside. It's just iru, it's just being poured from the pot. So we're makel, whether I use a chametz dikka pot, chametz dikka kettle, that I don't have to kasher that first, or I use a Pesach dikka pot, that in this case, I don't have to kasher it afterwards, even though I used it, and I poured it all over my sink, and the steam of the chametz of the sink is going into my pot, I don't have to worry about that, says the Aruch HaShulchan, and that's halacha l'maisa. Any questions on the kashering hagalat kelim, whether it's the cutlery or the bechers or the countertops or the sinks? Any questions on this?
So, Rav, this is Jeff Mann. Going back to the grates.
Yeah.
So for the grates, the pot that you use can be a chametz pot or a Pesach pot, as long as it hasn't been used in 24 hours.
What do you mean for the grates? You mean when you want to kasher your bechers, you mean?
No, the grates on the oven. So when you kasher, you're putting the pot on there.
Oh, that's a different thing. Yeah, the same thing. If you're kashering the grates the first time, you want the fire to spread, then you can use I would use a chametz dikka pot, because I would use a chametz dikka pot that wasn't used 24 hours. Why would I want to put a chametz dikka pot on my chametz dikka grates until I kasher them?
Right. So you could use the chametz dikka pot, and then and when you're getting the water hot to put in the sinks or
But that's for yesterday, Shir. That's just to spread out the fire that it should hit all the grates. Correct.
Right. Correct.
Yeah. Or by the way, if you want to use a Pesach dikka blech, you can do that also, as long as it's clean and the grates were not used for 24 hours.
Right. And then to do the iror, it can be a chametz dikeh kettle as well, or whatever you pour
correct.
It with.
Correct. That can be either one. But then if you want to put your chametz dikeh kettle on your Pesach dikeh grates, you know, that's also an issue. So you can do that. But then after you finish, you know, just put it on for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Because there's no real chametz over there and it wasn't used 24 hours. So you don't want, you know, your chametz dikeh pot sitting on your Pesach dikeh grates. But fire automatically kashes itself out. The only reason right. we wash the grates is when there's food and it's splashing and it goes on the grates. But just fire itself and nothing is splashing, there's no bleus. It gets burnt right away. And therefore, by the way, that's the reason why when it comes to basa v'chala, you know, most people are not machmir to have separate grates for milk and flatulence, right?
Right.
Because it all gets right. burnt out on the same plate right away. Now, the right. reason why milk and flatulence were more machmir, more makel in general, because milk and flatulence, if it's after 24 hours or it's been cleaned, it's nice and tam l'vgam anyway, and it's okay. On Pesach, we're machmir nice and tam l'vgam, and therefore, you know, we're more machmir obviously on the grates than we do the whole year.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on the kashering, on the Hagolas Kalim parts? No? Okay, good. Let's go to the next part. Next part is the next part of the sheet, which is Tvilas Kalim. Tvilas Kalim. So what's Tvilas Kalim? Tvilas Kalim, we know, is when you buy something new from a guy, Shulchan Aruch number 7, Hakoinem Oivit Kechavim, if you buy something from a guy, you acquire something from a guy, Klei Seuda Shamateches Oshes Chuchis. Either Klei Seuda, they have to be food utensils that are used at the Seuda, means at the final preparation, or at the eating, or the storage of the food, either made out of metal or made out of glass, Kelim HaMetzufim Be'evim Be'fnim, or utensils, even wooden utensils, that the inside is laid with lead, so the inside is metal, Afal Pi Shehem Chadoshim, even though they're brand new, Tzorach Ladvila Mamikvah and Mayim Shalaboyim Tzor. You got to tovel them in a mikveh or in a spring of 40 saw, just like a mikveh, like a woman's mikveh, you have to tovel your kelim, which is what we call a kelim mikveh. So firstly, the halacha is that tvilas kelim is only something which are utensils which are made for the final production of the food. Knives, forks, pots, pans, plates, right? But the thermometer that you put inside your meat to check if the meat is hot or not, that is not, even though it touches the food, but it's not klei seuda. It's not made for eating the food or holding the food that you can eat it. It's a stage removed and you would not have to table that. But for all intents and purposes, most of the stuff that touches the food and goes into the and is used for the eating the food or storing the food is, or a pan, whatever, obviously needs to be tovel. Disposable stuff does not need to be tovel. Aluminum foil that gets, aluminum tins that get disposed do not need to be tovel. Plastic does not need to be tovel. Wood does not need to be tovel. Stone does not need to be tovel. Only thing needs to be tovel is metal or glass. That needs to be tovel. And of course, if that's the main part of the kli. For example, somebody called me up and says, I have a plastic spatula with the handle is metal. And it might touch a little sometimes, the metal handle might touch my eggs. You have to tell you that? Answer is no, because the main part is the spatula part. That's plastic, doesn't need to be tabled. Now, important, especially Bizman Azeh, is that in our current situation, obviously everybody has an issue, then what should I do? After all, I can't go to the Kalim Mikveh, same, not safe, and it's Corona. What should I do if I get new stuff? Everybody has new stuff for Pesach. How am I going to table my stuff in the Kalim Mikveh this year? So, Heta number one, and it's very important, is that Rav Moshe Feinstein and my father told me all the years like that, and it's based on the Yaakov Emden, that holds that any Kli Cheres, any real china, does not have to be titled. China is made out of stone. Bone china, or expensive china, is made out of stone, and therefore it doesn't need to be titled. Some say, Bizman Azeh, that since the china is glazed, old china that we have, porcelain china is glazed, so it's like glass. So if it's like glass, so therefore it has to be titled. Others say, Rav Moshe held, no, not like that. I once spoke to East Side China. There's a store in Bar Park. The Alta Yigid over there, everybody knows who he is. When you got married, you probably went there, or people have it. You know, you go there, and you ask him, and he told me once, he said, no, I agree with Moshe Feinstein, he's 100% right. It's all bottle, and the main thing is the China part, and therefore, China does not need to be toivered. Nevertheless, the minhag by many people is, most people is, that China does not need to be toivled, but we toivle it anyway without a bracha. So machlekes, we toivle it without a bracha. So this year, I'm telling you straight out, if you have China dishes for Pesach, don't have to toivle it. After Pesach, after next year, when you'll be able to go to the Kelim Mikveh no problem, then you can toivle the China without a bracha, of course, because you never toivle China without a bracha. But this year, if you have China, you can rely on Rav Moshe Feinstein, no problem, and you don't have to toivle that China. Maybe it's very cheap China, no, very, very cheap, and that's mostly glass, that's a different story. But normal China dishes, or porcelain or stuff like that, does not need to be toivled, especially not this year, when it's hard for people to toivle, you can rely on that big cooler of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Now, let's say I have other stuff, pots, pans, cutlery, that I need to toivle. So how am I going to toivle that? So there's another halacha which says that you have to toivle something. By the way, before we get to anywhere, people should know that the Kelim Mikveh, I don't know about Rabbi Weitz's Kelim Mikveh, but I do know that the Kol Save Kelim Mikveh, the Kelim Mikveh by Kol Save, is outdoors. You don't have to touch any doors. You don't have to touch any handles. It's outdoors. They put a lot of chlorine inside, and the actual Kelim Mikveh, there's no virus that survives the Kelim Mikveh because they put a lot of chlorine inside in order to kill the virus. So technically speaking, you can take your Kelim over there. Now they send out an email, the Rabbanim, the neighbors send an email, make sure you go with gloves over there and make sure you don't linger around and don't go out of your car when you see somebody else over there. But technically you could toivel in the Kol Save Kelim Mikveh that has been chlorinated and there's really no problem. You come home, you wash it off with soap and water in the sink, there's no problem, you can toivel your Kelim like that. Nevertheless, people are concerned, people are worried, people don't want to do it, don't want to take a chance, the husband, the wife, the this, the that. I understand. So there must be other solutions. So what solutions can we give for people, halachical solutions, that can be toivel the kelim without having to go to the kelim mikveh? So solution number two, straightforward, Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, you can toivel in a mikveh oy mayon shel arba'im sa, a mikveh or a spring of 40 sa. Now, a mikveh means either a mikveh that we have, or an ocean. An ocean is perfectly lechatchila to be toivel because women can go to an ocean mikveh. I wouldn't recommend it because there are many halachas in that and it's usually not done right. But as a kelim mikveh, an ocean is lechatchila, no problem whatsoever. Go out to the boardwalk, go on a nice day, Monday it'll be 60 degrees. Go out of there, Atlantic Beach, Long Beach, Parakway, stand on the shore, put the kelim inside and you toivel your kelim with the bracha, no problem whatsoever. The issue with that is, first of all, is that you can't, halacha is in, when it comes to tefillas kelim, has to be done in one shot, right? That's why you have these baskets in all the kelim mikvahs. So it needs to be dumped in one shot. All the water has to come, says kriyat v'yivu b'mayim. It's got to go in one shot in the water. And you can't really do that in the ocean. You have no basket over there, and you're going to drop it over there, and you're going to lose it. So the halacha says in Shulchan Aruch, number 8, tzorach she'yeh kli rofi b'yodoy b'shas tefillah. That when you put your hand with the keli inside the water, make sure it's not tight. Because if you hold it too hard, it's a chatzitza, meaning your water has to go through between your fingers. You have to like put it in, let go for a second, and the water goes through. You don't want to do that in an ocean. So it says, which means that if your hand is wet first from the ocean water, and then you take the keli, so it's all connected. The water on your hand is still wet, and that's also the ocean water. So technically, you put your hand inside the ocean water, you know, by the shore, and you put your hand in there, and then with the wet hand, you take your cutlery, you hold it in your hand, don't hold it too tight, and you just move it around in the water underneath, you know, not in the wave, you know, where the water is in the shallow part, and that's how you toivel your kelim in the ocean. I thought that's a fantastic solution. You have the kele mikveh first. You don't want to do that. You go to the ocean. You make a bracha. It's lechatchila. There's no problem whatsoever. Issue is, my son tells me, Abba, they closed the beaches in Atlanta, in Long Beach. I think they closed because too many people were congregating on the beach. And he showed me a picture that they closed the beaches in Long Beach. That's a little bit of a problem. Tell people to go to Far Rockaway. You know, it's a little bit of an issue. You go there. I know how safe it is over there. So there's another solution. You can go. I think Rabbi Liebowitz says that there is a person in the bay between Woodmere and North Woodmere, which is a lake, and it's actually part of the ocean. Just it was, you know, the man made Branch Boulevard over there to separate, but it's really part of the bay, which is part of the ocean. So that's also a natural, that's definitely not good for mikveh, the women's mikveh, but that would be okay over here. The water is not moving, it's still water. If it's not during high tide, you can go over there and somebody offered to use their house and you go in their backyard. And somebody called me today from that place. He said, Rabbi, I went to the water between Woodmere and North Woodmere, and it's terrible over here. It's disgusting. And it's, I went in North Woodmere Park, and it smells, and the whole water is disgusting water, and I can't be there. How is the sakana? Because I can fall in. And that already seems to be off the table. So again, technically you can, but it's a little bit of a problem. So what are we going to do now? So we don't have those solutions either. You could go over there, you go in that lake between Woodmere and North Woodmere, or you can go in the Kalem Mikra and Kol Save, and go to the ocean. You have those three solutions. But it doesn't really work. What else can we do? So there's another solution, which is based on Rebbe Kiva Eger. Rebbe Kiva Eger quotes a Knesset HaGdoyla, number 9 on the sheet of Shulchan Aruch. So he says like this, number 9, the Knesset HaGdoyla Kosav, the Yesh Lachkar, Hani Chaviyos Didon Shal Cheres G'doyla, Samtupas Be'ever. We have these big, huge vats, you know, made out of earthenware, but the inside is made out of lead. Shemasimim behem yayin, and they put water inside, they put wine inside, they store wine. The Azim mikveh yafil. How, which mikveh are we going to put it in? The vadala yechilo esam meh mikveh tefidulosam. You can't fit it into a kale mikveh. It's so huge. What are we going to do that? It's huge vats. It's big tank, you know, big tanks. Gallons of, how are you going to put it in the kale mikveh? Says of Kivego, umutsosi b'tshuvas ksaviyad lechacham mari zevi. I found the Ksaviyad and Tshuva. There ain't takana. There's a trick. You know what you can do? Al kim al de haroma with a trick. The sitam la'evit kechavim matona ulahashila mimenu, to give it to a guy as a gift ulahashila mimenu, and to borrow it from the guy, because it says hakaina, you have to acquire it. And if I don't acquire it, it still belongs to the guy. Or I give it to the guy as a gift. I'm using his keli. I can borrow his keli after I gave it to him. You don't have to do tefillah in a keli mikveh. You don't have to use anything. You can get around the tefilling aspect. That's what Kiva Bregi brings down. And then he says that the Marim Elida says over here, well, it's only lined with lead, so it's not really a lead keli, and therefore you don't need anything. So others want to say, well, maybe the Kiva Bregi was makel over here. Because in this case, it's only a kulu, because it's not real keli. It's really a kli cheres. It's an earthenware keli that's lined with lead. And therefore, it's not really, that's why he was makel. But to be makel like this, to give it to a guy, okay. But the place can bring down, then you can rely on this on kiveya. And therefore, halacha lemaisi says, you can technically give it to a guy, and the guy owns it. And you tell the guy, by the way, it's yours, and now I just want to borrow it. So you can do that. The problem with that is, twofold. Number one, how is the guy acquiring your utensils? So there's a whole question. The Gemara says in Bukharis, the yid with one kinyan, a guy with one kinyan, which kinyan works for a guy? And the Shulchan Aruch brings down, the Tzais brings in Kuf Tzadi Dalet, that the kinyan that works for between a guy and a Jew on the Talklin, on movable goods, you really have to do two kinyan. You have to do kinyan kesef and kinyan meshicha or hagba, which means the guy has to do two kinyan. He has to give you money to buy it, because kinyan kesef might be the right kinyan, and he has to be moishach, take it into his possession, pick it up. He has to make both kinyan. So what you need to do really, in order to be that it belongs to the guy, is he has to do two kinyan. He has to give you money for it and give you a dollar for it, and he has to take it into his possession, pick it up, make a kinyan agba, then it's his. So it works. It's a little problematic. Because you need three things to happen in order for this to work. A, you need to find a guy. That's not so easy today. because many people said goodbye to their goyim, to the shiksas, to the maids, to the cleaning help, because nobody wants anybody coming from anywhere. So where are you going to find a goyim? You can't just tell a goyim, oh, by the way, I'm selling to you over the phone virtually. No, they have to make a kinyan. So A, you need to find a goyim that's going to give you a dollar and then pick it up and take it into their possession. And you have to explain to the goyim, by the way, it belongs to you. I want you to acquire this. It's yours, lock, stock, and barrel. Oh, in the meantime, I just need to borrow it. Let me borrow it for the next few days, for the next week, you know, and then afterwards you can take it back. I'm just borrowing it. If you can find such a guy, you can definitely do that. It's a cooler, but it definitely works, and you can make such a kinyan with a guy. They'll acquire it. They'll give you money for it, a dollar. They'll pick it up, whatever you need to be toiveled, and then you say, by the way, can I borrow it from you? And then you're good, and that's a kinyan that works, and that you don't have to toivel it, because it's not yours. It still belongs to the guy, and you borrow it. That's the third solution. Hard to do, hard to find a guy, explain it, you know, make sure it's done right. You can do it, but it's not so easy. And then there's a fourth solution. What's the fourth solution? The Shulchan Aruch says, Hakoine me'oivet kechavim klei suda, that you only have to toivel something if you acquire it, if it belongs to you. Huh? If it doesn't belong to you, but it's hefker, it belongs to nobody, you wouldn't have to toivel it. So let's make it that it doesn't belong to anybody. So the poskim want to say that if that's the case, already the Dakei Teshuva and others bring down, that you know what you can do if you don't have no time to toivel it, that you have no way to toivel it? You make it hefker in front of three people. That's halacha of hefker. So what would that mean in this situation? I call up my neighbors. I say, do me a favor. Everybody's home. So do me a favor, go to the front porch. Don't get out of your front porch. Go on the front porch. You take all your kalim and you put them in the middle of the street outside your property, and you say in front of three people, they can be relatives, no halacha of din edus, no halacha of din bezdin, just three people. They can be relatives, can be your father and the son, as long as three people above bar mitzvah, three males above bar mitzvah, everything is hefker. I'm making everything hefker. If anybody can take it, it's not mine, it's hefker. It belongs to anybody who wants. Right? That's fine. You made a hefker. And now you take it, but you don't acquire it. You acquired it from hefker. It's no good. So you just take it. Oh, by the way, I'm using it now, but it still belongs to hefker. It's still hefker. I'm just using it in the meantime. I'm not even borrowing it. I'm not even acquiring it. I'm just using the hefker for my own usage, but I never have any intention of acquiring it. And you have to do that the entire Pesach. Whenever you take it into, whenever you use it, no intention to acquire it, just to have it, just to use it from hefker. See, here you don't need a kelim mikveh, you don't even need a goy. You just need three of your neighbors that are sitting home anyway, and you makir it in front of them, and then you take it without acquiring it, just to use it. So Shlomo Zalman points out this etzah, the Shulchan Aruch says in number 10, then on Shabbos, let's say you bought something new and you want to use it, and you can be tevel on Shabbos. It's no question, could you tevel on Shabbos, could you not? It's called tikkun mon or not. The Ramah says, well, if you want to take some water from the kelim mikveh into your cup, so then as you're taking the water into your cup, so that's a form of just, you know, taking it into the cup. So that's like teveling it without actually being the sack in it. Ramah says you can do that. Says the Shulchan Aruch, the best way to do it is to give it to a guy on Shabbos, and then you use borrowing it from the guy, and there's no problem. Says the Shulchan Zaman, why doesn't the Shulchan Aruch say to be mafkir? You can be mafkir on Shabbos. Let the Shulchan Aruch say, be mafkir in front of three people, and you won't have a problem. Why can't he say that? Says the Shulchan Zaman, because the whole thing is really a funny trick. Because every time you're using it, you're not acquiring it, so what are you doing? You're just using it from half to every time? How does that work? Look in the Milcha Shleima, number 10, he brings down, Hakoyne mikoy kli, you bought a utensil, vihifkiroi, and you made a hefker. Veloki you the ache, and somebody else used it, or you yourself, ve'einai miskaven liskoy boy, and you use it without having intention of acquiring it after you took it from hefker. Kivin chain the kli bailim, since the kli has no owner, ein chayvet tvila, you don't have to table it. Umemele in the sestamshes, and therefore there's no problem using it because you don't have to table it. Even though for Shabbos they did not give this solution to be mafkirit, even though many said you could be mafkir Shabbos, it looks like you're reacquiring it by using it. That's kind of funny. Says, for example, by Shemitah, we say you can do that. Chavit Bia B'Shemitah, Sam Kinnah Shevach Taganta. Why by Shemitah do we allow you to reacquire it without actually acquiring it, just using it after you master it? Bizman Abiyur. Hainu Mishum says, Rishon Zaman, the lay Efshe B'Tekon Acheres, Hikilu Shom, Boifan Efke, Lizlag, Lushrab, Nishos, Yimichim, Chayzim, Zaycha. There's no other solution, and therefore by Shemitah you can do it. The Efshe says, Rishon Zaman, Shebeshah Satchak, Yechelim in a desperate situation, Yechelim Gam B'Shabbos Lahafkir, Ulechavin Shemishtamesh, Kol HaShabbos B'Shel Hefker. You can also be Mahfir on Shabbos, and you have intention that I'm using it the whole Shabbos only out of Hefker, it still remains Hefker, I'm not taking it to my possession. Shem Zalman says it for one Shabbos, I suppose, B'Shas HaTchak, you have no other solution, then you can rely on that even for the entire Pesach. But you should make very clear, after you Mahfir it, I'm only using it now for the entire week, and I'm not acquiring it. And when me or my wife or my kids are picking up the plate and taking it to the cutlery and taking it to the kitchen in order to do the dishes and in order to wash it, then nobody is ever acquiring it. And tell your whole family, we're not acquiring it, we're just using it from Hefker, but it doesn't belong to us. I guess that would be a solution as well. So we have four solutions for Tvilas Kelim. The first one is going to the Kelim Mikveh in Kolseif. The second one is the ocean or the lake. The third one is give it to a guy and let her make two kinyanim and borrow it back from her and tell him, just borrowing from me belongs to you. And the fourth one in this order is if you mafkin in front of three people and you're just using it without actually acquiring it. Any questions on Tfilas Kelim?
If you're buying a new pot to kosher, using as a koshering pot for Hagala, does that need to be Tovel?
No, it does not. Okay. That is regarding Tfilas Kelim. Okay. Let's move on to three more things. A few questions I've been getting the last few days, and anybody can call me for any question all the time, but I know these are some recurrent questions. I'd like to discuss it with the Olim, with everybody here. People are telling me that they're afraid to go to any store and especially to Gourmet Glatz, and they'd rather just order and have it delivered and don't want to leave their homes, which is understandable for people that are concerned about that. So they say, what about milk? What am I going to do for Pesach? I can't buy, Gourmet Glatz doesn't deliver. Amount of fruit is once a week. What am I going to do for milk for Pesach? So the truth is, really, one should not rely on Vittel and et cetera, et cetera. But most milks, if it's kosher milk, even if it's not kosher Pesach, the reason why it's not kosher Pesach is because it's kidneyous, because it has kidneyous in it. If you're Sephardi, there's no problem. You can have kidneyous. If you're Ashkenazi, we have a minhag for 1,000 years already. We don't have kidneyous. However, the halach is that kidneyous before Pesach is bittul. So you're relying on bittul, which is not lechatchila, but b'shas hatchak, if you have nothing else, you can rely on bittul. For example, if somebody is lactose intolerant, so what they do is they buy lactate milk before Pesach, and the lactate milk is regular milk, it just has kidneys inside. But since they buy it before Pesach, it comes into the Jew's possession before Pesach. So the kidneys is bottle bereif. It's bottle in the majority of the milk. And therefore, even though it's technically kidneys, but it's bottle in the bereif of the milk, before Pesach, kidneys is bottle. On Pesach, not, but before Pesach, kidneys is bottle. So I suppose if somebody's worried about getting kosher Pesach milk, you can get regular milk from Costco, as long as you buy it before Pesach, in which case it's bittul. It's a cooler you're relying on, because you're relying on bittul, and we don't like to do bittul lechatchila. But in this situation, if a person needs, it's a cooler he can rely on. The same would apply with, somebody says, I don't know, I see in Costco, they sell cut up vegetables, squash and stuff like that. That's no kosher Pesach hashgacha. So the truth is, what happened over here, let's say they cut it with a chametz sticker knife. Let's say there's a crumb of chametz left on one of those vegetables. So again, if you buy it before Pesach and you wash it before Pesach, you rinse it off, then there's no chashash really, and you can do that from these items. People ask me about stuff they opened up during the year. Kosher Pesach stuff that they opened up during the year, could they use it on Pesach? There's no halacha that says that you can only use clothes, you can only use closed stuff for Pesach. Something which is open during the year would be okay, but of course it depends on any situation. If it's something that he touches chametz sticky hands and he put his hands inside with his chametz sticky hands, should he use it on Pesach? Absolutely not. Even a mashu of chametz is forbidden on Pesach. So that cannot work. Or if a person uses, we said last night in the shir, a person uses spices in order to spice his soup, and the spices kashla Pesach, because by the way, many spices are not, because they put preservatives, they put mix it together with other things. But let's say whole stuff that doesn't get ground, and it's or some stuff which is kashla Pesach by using the whole year. Well, it depends. If you pour the spice jar over the soup or over the chunks, and the steam of the chunks of the soup and right inside the spice jar, then that has bleus of chametz, and you're going to do the same thing on Pesach, that's no good. So every case will be different. I can't give a blanket heter on that. Like I say, every year, all medicines are permitted, all pills are permitted, even kidneyous pills are permitted. Kidneyous pills are permitted, which means all these pills that a person takes, let's say a person takes zinc pills and vitamin pills and Centrum pills and all these pills, and he's worried about it, et cetera, et cetera. Could he take it on Pesach? Yes. Does he have to get Advi Kashla Pesach? No. If it's a swallowable pill, there's no shayla. No, I don't think any pills have actual chametz in them. At most, it's kidneyous, and kidneyous in a pill form, swallowable pill form, is permitted to be taken on Pesach for any normal reason. And therefore, if a person, let's say, has a headache and wants to take an Advil or Tylenol or any of that stuff, even if it has kidneyous inside, it's swallowable. It's swallowable, and therefore it's permitted. The question arises, and somebody asked me that question today. I don't have a full answer yet. I'm leaning towards being makel, but I don't want to say it yet, so I need to go through it a little bit more. If somebody says, I have a supplement made out of kidneys, which has like a zinc inside or a vitamin C, I said, why don't you just take a pill? I said, no, I can't get a pill anymore, and I make it into a drink or a chewable candy or something like that, and I want to know, could I have kidneys as a chewable candy, not for candy purposes, because it's a zinc pill or it's a vitamin C pill. And in this situation, where people are in now in a magefa, so therefore that's clearly protecting us, is that permitted? I said, I hear the question, it's a valid question, because on the one hand, does it really help? Maybe it does. Joe, you're a doctor. Does it help? Does it not help? Does it help somewhat? Maybe yes. If it helps, then it will be permitted. If it's just to strengthen yourself, like vitamins usually do, then you can't take vitamins in a chewable form, kidneyous, if you're an Ashkenazi on Pesach. Maybe the situation I'm leading that maybe yes, it's okay because it's a magefa and it helps. Anything helps. Everything, b'sol salanta. Let people eat on Yom Kippur. They shouldn't die from cholera. Maybe that's different. They have to be able to eat, and that was proven. It's not proven. I'm not really sure. I'll do a little bit more research, but I'm leaning. I can hear that's a good question, and I'm hearing that it might be okay even to take it as kidneys, of course, if it's any form of protection that it will bring or gives the body strength so it doesn't succumb. Even if a person gets it, it doesn't succumb to it. So I can hear that even if chashash rochek, that will be permitted from kidneys perspective. Chametz, of course, they will not be permitted, but I don't think any of them have actually chametz inside them. One more thing, where I always say about medicines we spoke about, pills we spoke about, all the lotions and soaps and perfumes, meikar din, they're all fine, there's no shadow whatsoever. Some people are machmir on the actual lotions because that's like alcohol and you can drink it, so you want to be machmir, they don't use that on Pesach, but meikar din, those that do, there's no problem. For sure, the soaps and the lotions that mitzvah machila skela, the dog cannot eat it, dog does not eat soap, cannot drink it, and therefore it's all fine, you don't have to check anything. When it comes, and by the way, the reason why they have the list, I suppose, is for chametz gomur. I don't know if there's real chametz in medicine. Maybe some supplements have real chametz, so that, yes, might be an issue. But again, something which is in a pill form, if it's chametz, then if it's for anything which is internal, it's permitted. But even if it's just for vitamins, if it's for kidneys, and it's a pill form, is also permitted. And so too for a headache or for a cold, anything in a pill form is permitted, as long as it's not chametz, as long as it's just kidneys. And I think almost all pills, I'd be surprised if any of them have any chametz. If you have any questions, call me. I'm happy to look in the books and try and figure it out. One more thing, which I wanted to mention. We said last night that you can sell chametz gomur. And I want to make it clear that, of course, the mechira that we sell chametz works even a chametz gomer. There's no problem really. Mikadin, there's no shaila. And people sell chametz gomer every year. People sell, pretzels and bagels and bread. Lubavitch, I think, has a minig bedafka to sell chametz to show that it's a real mechira. So clearly, you're allowed to sell chametz gomer. Nevertheless, there are quite a lot of people that don't sell chametz gomer. They don't want to sell chametz gomer because the truth is the whole sale that we're doing, the mechira, is somewhat of a harama. The guy doesn't take it into his possession, really. He has a kinyan, it's in your house, nothing really changes. It changes ownership. He doesn't take it into his possession, so it's a harama. It's like a little, you're trying to get smarter, to outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, even though halachically, technically, it works as a mechira, but people say, Chametz Gomer, I'm not going to do this. I don't want to be saimach on this kula. He doesn't take into his possession, and therefore, I don't want to sell Chametz Gomer, and that's a legit chumra, and that's a legit minig. So a few people asked me already that this year, people are concerned that, not concerned, there's not going to be any food left, but I don't want to have to go more to the store afterwards, and therefore, this year, I want to sell Chametz Gomer. If every year I did not sell Chametz Gomer, could I sell Chametz Gomer this year or not? So the truth is, the Shulchan Aruch says, Shulchan Aruch number 11 says, that something which you take upon yourself as a minig three times, for example, to fast on a certain day, then that's called a minig toiv, and that's called a hanhoga toiv, and that's like a neder, and you have to be matir neder if you want to change it. So the Shach asked the question in number 11, the Shach asks, how is it different than if somebody fasts Bahab? If somebody fasts Bahab, and the halacha is if there's a bris mila or sudas mitzvah, he doesn't have to be matan neder. So the Bashak says, well, Bahab was never really included in that, or bris mila was never included in my Kabbalah, and that's different. But the Neder Yehuda says, no, that doesn't make sense. He gave a much better answer, says Neder Yehuda. It depends. If a person fasts a certain fast day, and he decides now, I don't want to do it anymore, then he's changing his hanoga taiva. He's changing his minik. You have to be matan neder. You cannot do that. You had a good minik, a minik taiva. You want to change it? That's no good. You have to be matan neder. Masha Einkein, if a person says, listen, I'm not changing my hanoga taiva. I'm not changing my minik. I still do that original minik. I still have that minik. Just this year is a special occasion. I have a sudas mitzvah, and therefore, just for this time, I'm breaking it. That's not going against your minik. That's not going against what your original hanhoga was, and therefore you don't have to be matan neder. And therefore the poskim say, it makes sense, based on this Neder Yehuda on number 11 in the sheet, the same would apply over here. If never you sell chametz gomer, and this year you want to sell chametz gomer because you feel, I don't want to have to go to the store and go, I don't know how long it's going to take, and I need food afterwards, and I'm worried going to make an extra trip, and therefore I want to sell chametz gomer, then one, even his minik is not like that, he can do that without having to be matan neder. I do want to mention, though, however, that this is all good, and it's a good, valid reason, if that's the reason why a person doesn't want to sell, why a person this year does not want to sell chametz gomer. I don't want to go to the store extra. I want to stay home as much as I can. I want to be able to last out longer without having to go to the store. That's all legit. But if a person says, I don't want to sell the chametz gomer because I bought so much this year, and therefore, why waste it? Why throw it out? That's not a good reason. Because the mitzvah is to throw it out. Tashchisu, not about tashchis. The mitzvah is tashbisu. You have to get rid of the chametz. The mitzvah is to get rid of it. It's such a shame, it's such a waste. I can't see good food being thrown out. What do you mean? The Torah says, get rid of your chametz. Throw it out. So that's not a reason. The reason is because I don't want to go to the store. I don't want to have to make an extra trip. Or my kids are going to want the cereal and they're not going to be able to have the cereal and it might not be in the store. I'm worried they might not be able to have it. That's all valid reasons. But the reason because I bought so much this year and now to waste, throw it out is a waste. That's a wrong cheshbon. It's not a waste. The mitzvah is to get rid of it. Not be a waste. The Torah says get rid of it. So you can't say, well, I think it's a waste. That's not a valid reason. And for that alone, I would say do not change your minute. Of course, if you do it because, like I said, I don't want to have to go to the store again. It's an extra trip outside. My kids need the bread. My kids want the bread. The kids want the cereal. And I don't want to have to go much younger, but it might not be. That's all valid reasons. And then even if you don't usually sell chametz gomer, this year you can do it without having to be matan neder. Any questions on what we said or any questions in general on Pesach, which can be asked in a public forum? Zehu? Okay. then have a wonderful night to everyone. Stay safe, stay sane. Tomorrow night we'll try and give a shiur, an Iyun shiur again on something related to Pesach. And then Thursday night we might give how to run a Seder. Many people are doing Seder the first time. You know, the structure of the Haggadah, of the Seder, what to focus on, how to make it a good Seder for ourselves, for our families, for our kids. And then Monday night we'll give a Mitzvah Shem the Haggadah shiur like we give every year. Have a wonderful night to everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. Have a good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.